Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey, welcoming you once again to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Now, for the last couple of years, we've had a wonderful sponsor of this program called Seniors Rights. As the name suggests, they offer free legal advice and, in some case, legal representation to us seniors. Now, this is most important. As we age, we do become vulnerable to elder abuse. Elder abuse is not always violence. It can be your property, your will, your estate, and very often it is close family members who are trying to rob you and take advantage of your property. These are just a few of the legal problems that we can face as we age. In the studio with me today is the producer and presenter of the very well-known 2RPH program, AbleQuest, Barbara Sullivan. Hello, Barbara. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Dave. It's terrific to be on the program.
Excellent. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, and I was very excited about the interview I had with Margaret Duckett. And I agree with you. The world is becoming increasingly complex for seniors, particularly if you're disadvantaged or English is not your first language. So being fully aware of an organisation which can offer legal advice and advocate for your rights free of charge is really important. And that's what today's program's about. I spoke by phone with Margaret Duckett, who is the board chair and president of Seniors Rights Service. And apart from explaining the organisation itself, Margaret talked in particular about what she hopes will come out of the Aged Care Royal Commission, and also about the increasing incidence of elder abuse, which you alluded to, Dave.
Excellent. This is really wonderful because there's been so much publicity about it, particularly with COVID. Nursing homes have come under fire. Whole lot of issues there, isn't there?
There certainly are. And Margaret is an ideal person to discuss this. She's got a long background, both on a professional and personal basis in this area.
Oh, that's excellent. All right. Well, let's get on with it and hear what Margaret's got to say.
Hello, Margaret. Thanks so much for joining 2RPH today.
I'm really looking forward to speaking with you about the issues for older people in New South Wales.
Now, to some extent, the name Seniors Rights Service is self-explanatory, but can you explain briefly what that means?
We start out as a core statewide community legal centre for seniors. So all the legal issues that might be relevant for an older person we're defining as someone aged over 65, or if they're of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander heritage, then over 55. In addition to our legal support, we also have aged care advocacy service, and we have advocates both in Sydney and in 9 regional areas throughout New South Wales. We're free and it's confidential. We use an interpreter if we need to, and if we can't help you directly, we refer you to those that we know should be able to help you with any particular problem.
You mentioned aged care advocacy. What is that exactly?
Often people aren't necessarily aware of what their rights are. So we help people both who have issues with their aged care provider in a care facility or whether they're receiving support at home. If you have a problem, you can discuss it with us. We can help you be clear on what your rights are to those services and what issues could be addressed. And then with that information, either you might go back to the provider yourself or we can have a joint telephone call, say, with the provider, or we might speak to the provider on your behalf if that's what you decide you want.
Can you give an example of that?
It can be something really minimal, like you don't like the food that you're getting. You're of a different cultural background and you want the food that you're used to. So then we'll talk to the provider about, right, what modifications can be done so that instead of having bangers and mash, you have a nice stir fry.
That's right. As you say, they can be as simple as that, or it may be much more complex.
Yeah. And there's also things where, for example, with COVID, many of the people receiving home care support were really concerned that the carers were coming into their homes and were not wearing masks. And they got very fearful about that. And some people, in fact, cancelled their services.
Yes.
Because they were so frightened about the fact there they were restricting themselves at home, and here was someone coming in who was visiting a lot of people, and was not wearing a mask and might easily, in their view, transmit an infection.
Yes, and surely that must have been against protocol.
Yes, definitely.
Now,
and it's talking to the providers and saying, you have to insist all your staff follow proper infection control.
Am I correct in thinking that the issues that seniors are facing, and you've just kind of added an example there, that they're becoming more complex?
Well, we've doubled the number of calls to our service in 2020 compared with 2019. Over 7,000 people contacted us.
That is an astonishing increase.
Yes. It's still not enough. We're very conscious at Seniors Rights Service that there are 1.5 million older people in New South Wales. So 7,000 moving from 4,000, it might be a large increase, but it's still not touching the sides of what potentially might be the problem. That's part of why we've expanded to have regional offices throughout New South Wales to make it easier for people to contact us and to know that there's someone local who understands the local issues in Lismore or Dubbo or Nowra or Broken Hill. So we're spread quite broadly throughout New South Wales so that that local environment can be taken into account and the person you contact understands the context in which you have a problem.
Margaret, your personal background lends a lot of experience to the role that you've taken on here. Can you just give us a potted version of your personal background and your professional background?
Look, I've had a personal and family interest in ageing issues my whole life, including I was director of the Office for Ageing for New South Wales at one stage. I spent a couple of years in Montreal at McGill University at the Centre for Medicine, Ethics and Law, so really looking at that interchange of ethics with healthcare system. I spent the last 4 years of my mother's life acting as her primary carer after she'd had 5 general anaesthetics over a 6-month period and got total short-term memory loss. And so I supported her to remain living in the family home. As she kept telling me, I was responsible for her having fun, taking her out for lunch, taking her to the pictures,
yes,
doing all those sort of things.
Now, there are two issues which are really very considerable in seniors' lives at the moment. And one is, you've touched on the impact of COVID-19 on your constituency. And the other is the upcoming final report on the Aged Care Royal Commission. I understand it's due on February the 26th. You made a submission, I know. Would you like to talk about what you feel are the main points that must come out of a Royal Commission?
I think a rewriting of the whole Aged Care Act was last rewritten in 1998, and one of the big chain service providers was heavily involved in designing that new act, and it's written to support for-profit service providers. We think it should be written to focus on the needs of the older person themselves, that it be client-centred. And we think it also, given all the issues that came up through the Royal Commission, it needs to focus on human rights and acknowledging that older people do not lose their human rights as they get older. If anything, they often need those human rights upheld more than anyone else. I was actually horrified earlier this week when there was a little grab on the news of someone talking about the rollout of the COVID vaccine next week and how they would be contacting the guardians and other key people to get informed consent for the residents of aged care facilities. No, you ask the resident themselves. If there's some difficulty, you use what's called supported decision making and work through all the steps to actually get proper informed consent. And with my mother's short-term memory loss, that was an issue I had to deal with all the time. And I got quite expert at doing support decision-making. Both my brother and I were really conscious if we got the same answer a couple of times. Right, that was Ruth's decision.
Right.
It takes a bit longer, but you don't have to ignore those rights. In fact, it is outrageous that people even think it is ethical to ignore those rights. And so to hear a formal interview on the ABC radio just made me so angry. It was just seen as reasonable to just proceed without going to the older person themselves.
Yes.
And that's the sort of thing that we really do see as important, that we have to base our provision of aged care in a human rights framework where it acknowledges that older people do have their rights, that if there are issues that may take a bit longer to achieve informed consent, right, it takes a bit longer. It is not an excuse for just ignoring those rights. Some of the other things we think we need and hope we'll get in the recommendation is a lot more funding to increase aged care advocacy with and on behalf of older people. Not enough older people know their rights or are fearful if they try and exercise their rights that they will upset their provider and the provider will withdraw the necessary care.
Yes.
So we need to have that addressed. There are currently 100,000 people on the home care waiting list. There has been release of an extra 10,000 places and another 10,000 places soon.
Drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it doesn't touch the underlying 100,000. It doesn't address the issue that a lot of people die while they're on the waiting list.
Mm.
I mentioned earlier my mother had been on the waiting list for home care support for a couple of years before we got anything substantial. And people who don't have support, like I was able to provide my mother, end up going into residential care against their will because they can't continue living at home. And they're the sorts of things that I think we need to address. Now, there's then an argument about the funding and how much funding we're talking about. Some recent surveys of the electorate say that most people would be quite willing to see a high proportion of their taxes going into making the aged care provision something they're proud of rather than something they're ashamed about. There's also the issue of exactly looking at how that money is allocated and making sure it's transparent. When the federal government has allocated extra funding, for example, to aged care facilities, they've really put caveats on how it is to be spent. It's just left to the discretion of the service provider themselves. We don't do that in any other area where we allocate government funding.
Absolutely not.
So I don't know why there's this special provision for aged care.
Because one of the providers helped write the act,
yeah,
probably.
It could be that. I'd hate to be seen as cynical enough to expect that. Because also before the new act, money used to be allocated in separate tranches. So the money for the hotel type services associated with aged care provision was separate from the money set aside for the care delivery part of aged care. And with the new Act in 1998, they were combined. What happened was that the amount that service providers appeared to be allocating to care delivery dropped markedly. That's when we started to get enormous change in the workforce in aged care services. Currently, most of the aged care workers tend to be students or people who have very limited choices in other types of work.
Yes.
And the rate of pay is very, very low. And the proportion of trained staff, well, some are trained for a whole 12 hours. So in our current system, you need to have a registered nurse available to dispense medication, particularly pain medication. Now, for a lot of facilities, if you get a really bad headache at 5:15, you have to wait until 8:00 in the morning before you'll even be able to get an aspirin. Now, that is just unacceptable.
So, therefore, in selecting an aged care facility, you need to look for whether they've got a 24-hour nurse.
And that's what's so difficult, because many people look at the hotel-type aspects. It looks clean and there's lovely gardens and all this sort of thing. But what is the staffing ratio? What are the staff like? Do people, if you speak English, do the staff actually speak English and understand English? Or do they speak with a strong accent that's hard to understand?
Mm.
If you come from a culturally and linguistically diverse background, often people lose their languages in reverse order that they learnt them. An 80-year-old person might no longer remember much English. And so someone, say, with Greek as their basic language, speaking with someone from the Philippines, staffer, is total miscommunication. because neither of them understand each other. And that's the reality of things happening.
And that's actually quite difficult if you think about what a multicultural society we are.
And increasingly, our ageing population is non-English speaking, and we need to be addressing that in our workforce planning as well.
We're not at the moment? Is that what you're saying?
Not well, because it's very hard to assess. Right, we're going to have three people who don't speak English admitted as residents in the next 6 months. That's working out how you deal with that. And some aged care facilities are really good. But the problem is that it does matter depending on the actual manager of the facility. If a manager of a facility has real empathy for their older person, that tends to flow through to how the staff deal with the residents. If they don't, that also flows through. And there were so many instances of real problems. But I actually want to, in many ways, concentrate on home care delivery, because even when people are in their 90s, the majority of them are not living in residential care. The majority live at home or with family, but in the community. And sometimes that can be even more isolated than living in a facility.
And also can give rise to legal issues, I imagine.
Yes.
That are very problematic.
The amount of abuse directed towards older people, we're getting more and more cases reported over the last 3 years. And the amount of elder abuse reported during 2020 was 75% higher than 2019 to us, which is very, very distressing. And they're sometimes quite simple. So, for example, an abusive son lives with his mother. He lost his job, which was part-time. So he's therefore getting very limited unemployment benefits. And so he was demanding access to his mother's bank account to pay for his drugs. And she didn't know where to turn. We had another case of a daughter and her two young children moved back home with her father after she lost a job due to COVID. And she was applying pressure to get her father to sign the house over to them because she would get it eventually. And that sort of inheritance impatience is quite common. And the father rang us because he really feared that if he actually gave in to the pressure and signed the house over, then the next step would be in a couple of weeks there'd be pressure on him to move out of the house.
Into an aged care facility, which he didn't want to do.
Yes. Yeah.
So in giving legal advice, you give some advice and then direct them to somebody that can help carry it out, or do you follow through the whole legal service?
It depends on the exact case. We have a number of lawyers. We also have 1.5 social workers to help when there's housing issues. And that's what we talk about, things becoming more complex. They start involving not only specific legal issues, but complex lives and things going wrong.
Margaret, you mentioned earlier that the service was available to people 65 or over.
That's correct. Their very first consultation is free. If they need more advice, then it becomes subject to an assessment of their means, and they might be referred to a private solicitor for further advice, or we might take them on as an ongoing client, depending on their level of disadvantage. We don't often take cases to court, but we do take some, particularly if they're setting a precedent, and we think it's really important. We have a specialist strata service, and we have specialist advice for people living in retirement centres, etc. So we do try and cover quite a wide gamut of things.
How can people contact you?
Best to ring us on our 800 number, 1-800-424-079. I will repeat that, 1-800-424-079. You can ring that anywhere in New South Wales, and we will try and be providing advice that is tailored to your needs.
Thank you very much for joining us, Margaret. And we will look forward to hearing the outcome of the Aged Care Royal Commission.
Yes, I hope we're going to be successful in getting some fundamental changes put in place.
I've just been speaking with Margaret Duckett, who is Board Chair and President of Seniors Rights Service.
You with Optimal Life on the RPH Network. And Barbara, you've got a story now about the oldest Olympian.
Yes, this one was from the South Sydney Herald, a recent issue. The headline reads, "Age Celebrated, Gender Discriminated." And the journalist was Steve Turner. Hungarian Agnes Kaléty, the world's oldest Olympic champion, recently celebrated her 100th birthday. Fleeing the Nazis, surviving the Holocaust with a false ID, and later escaping Hungary at the start of the Soviet clampdown on the country, she finally competed in her first Olympic Games aged 31, before going on to win more gymnastics medals than anyone else in Melbourne 4 years later in 1956. A new book about Kaléty hails her as Queen of Gymnastics, something she modestly describes as an exaggeration. Despite missing three Olympics in her prime, she won a total of 10 medals, five of them gold, and is still the oldest gymnastics gold medalist ever. As the International Olympic President, Thomas Bach, acknowledged when offering congratulations, her haul could have been far higher. "These 100 years felt to me like 60, Kaléty said, as she celebrated with a cake, with fireworks fizzing from it, and a smile so wide it could have lit up Budapest. It served as an instant pick-me-up.
Barbara, what an interesting story. That lady didn't start competing till she was 31.
Unbelievable.
Nowadays, they're on the scrap heap. Aren't they? Yeah.
Flip those two digits, they start at 13.
You're not wrong. Thank you. That was most interesting. What a lovely story. Going to change the subject now to libraries. A library is much more than just a book warehouse. It's an important cornerstone for a healthy community. Libraries give people the opportunity to broaden their horizons, whether that's through finding a new job, exploring medical research, discovering new ideas, or just getting lost in wonderful stories. Libraries are a safe haven, perfect for personal development, but they have changed. Now, the author says, "I read about 50 books each year, and the fact that I can have multiple books in my pocket at any one time, anywhere, blows my mind. Now I have access to millions of books at my fingertips, just by scrolling through the Kindle store until something piques my interest. Kindle gives me fast fiction, true crime, autobiographies, international books that have not made it to Australia." Now, author Neil Gaiman said, "Google can bring you 100,000 answers, but a librarian brings you the correct answer." When most people think libraries, they think books. But books are slowly taking on a different shape. Audiobooks and e-books are now becoming far more common. There's an e-book revolution. Apps such as Borrowbox and Libby have revolutionised the library book lending system. You still need a library card, but once you've created an account, entered your library card number, you can access all the audio and e-book content at the library that you like. For most libraries, that is a lot of books. These apps work the same way as borrowing a book from a library. If someone else has the book, you can reserve it. If you have not finished it after your loan period, you can renew it. If you finish it early, just hit the return button and get another one. These are great for the industry because it protects the rights of publishers and authors. It means the authors are remunerated in the right way, in the same way as traditional libraries. E-books, it's a revolution. Just make sure that you are part of it. And just following on from that article there, it's saying how easy it is to get an e-book. All you need is a library card virtually. Go down and just borrow it like any other. So we said it's a revolution. Be part of it. Looking there at the changing state of libraries and just how wonderful they are today. With e-books, you can have anything you want virtually at the touch of a button. All right, we're going to finish the program today by looking at interest rates, which, as we age, you might like to downsize, buy another place, move. Very, very important. This says why interest rates are staying put. The Reserve Bank of Australia says a premature hike in interest rates would come at the expense of jobs. It would hinder the nation's economic rebound from the coronavirus pandemic. Fronting the Housing Economics Committee, the RBA, Governor Philip Lowe said Australia should resist political pressure to lift interest rates. That's because doing so could harm the jobs growth. Dr. Lowe said a tightening of the labour market was vital to boost jobs and kickstart a rise in wages. These are forecast to remain subdued while inflation sits below the central bank's target range. That is, basically 2 to 3%. He said meeting this condition will require a tighter labour market, stronger wages growth than we're currently forecasting. It's difficult to determine exactly when this condition might be met. However, based on the outlook I've discussed recently, we do not expect this before 2024, and it is possible it will be even later than this. Asked by Liberal MP Tim Wilson why he would not lift rates to ignite inflation, Dr. Lowe said it would put upward pressure on the Australian dollar. That would constrain jobs market. He said, "What I'm doing is the very thing that I can encourage, creation of jobs." Well, that's it for our program today. Barbara Sullivan, thank you so much. And what an interesting interview and program it's been.
It was great to be on the program, Dave. Really enjoyed it. And it occurred to me that we should give Seniors Rights Service phone number.
Most definitely.
If anyone had been listening and was wanting to contact them, 1-800-424-079. And their website is seniorsrightsservice.org.au. 1-800-424-079.
Excellent. Now, Barbara, thank you very, very much for that. And that interview did very well, and it was excellent to have that. It's a wonderful service, isn't it, for us older ones?
Yes.
Free legal advice and many times free legal representation in some cases. So, Barbara, thank you very much again. Now, just before I go, you do a wonderful program here on 2RPH, Able Quest. Tell us when that's on next.
It's on every fortnight, 3 o'clock on a Friday, and it's repeated the following Monday at 3 o'clock. And we cover assistive technology and initiatives that help people with disabilities, living with disabilities, lead more independent lives and have a better quality of life overall.
Most important. Barbara Sullivan, once again, thank you very, very much. Keep up the good work.
Bye-bye, Dave. Thank you.
Look forward to hearing you on air again. Bye-bye.